So, we're reading from the Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Volume 2, and Chapter 16, and the 20th and 21st verses. Translation: because the Lord was engaged in various ways in preaching work in East Bengal, his wife, Lakshmi Devi, was very unhappy at home in separation from her husband. Translation: the snake of separation bit Lakshmi Devi, and its poison caused her death. Thus she passed to the next world. She went back home, back to Godhead. Purport: as stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, yang yang vapi shmaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram. One's practice in thinking throughout his entire life determines the quality of his thoughts at death. And thus, at death, one obtains a suitable body. According to this principle, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune from Vaikuntha, who was absorbed in thought of the Lord in separation from him, certainly went back home to Vaikuntha Loka after death. So, there's several important themes in this verse. It's as many of you know, Kaviraj Goswami, Krishna Kaviraj Das Goswami, he summarized a lot of the pastimes, the earlier pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Vrindavan Das Thakur had elaborately presented them in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And this one is no exception, because although Prabhupada touches on, almost like in sutra form, touches on a lot of the elements of this particular pastime of Lakshmi Devi apparently, and put it in quotes, dying, the fact is, it was not an ordinary situation, and nor it was any kind of ordinary disappearance. In fact, I'm going to be reading some passages because from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, the commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he actually explains 21 pages purport, where he talks about this disappearance of Lakshmi. So just imagine what kind of erudite scholar Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, that he could write 21 pages on this topic without exhausting it. It reminds me of another pastime of his where he once began speaking, and I think it was in Prayag, but I can't remember for sure what place it was. But he was speaking on the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he spoke for a month on the same verse, and not in any way exhausting. He could have gone on for many more months on that one verse. He was such a great scholar that people avoided him. They used to cross to the other side of the street, some of the big Mayavadis and so-called transcendentalists. They were afraid of speaking with him because he had eidetic memory, which we sometimes call photographic memory. And so anything he'd ever read, he had devoured whole libraries of books when he used to look after the sons of kings. And they had libraries. The kings were some of the only people that could afford to have libraries or who had access to so many books. So he used to go through everything in the library. And then years later, if he wanted to quote something, he would even mention the page and what paragraph he was quoting from. So people, you can imagine, in debate, he was pretty hard to handle. Of course, he couldn't really be handled at all. But anyway, there's actually a theme that I'm going to try to develop a little bit today. And I'll just briefly mention it. And that is that we can see Krishna or his eternal associates according to are adhikar, which means adhikar is translated in different ways. One of the translations of adhikar is ability, according to our ability. Also, it's translated as qualification. So if you have the qualification, you can see Krishna according to your qualifications. And that also goes for Krishna's eternal associates. We can perceive them according to our capacity, which is another meaning of adhikar. And then capacity to understand is still another meaning. So what is our capacity to perceive? Just like we tend to see according to pradyaksha, according to sense perception. Pradyaksha meaning literally against the eye. So we tend to perceive in that way. Then there are deeper levels of perception. But ultimately, the ultimate seeing is on the level of seeing the spirit, seeing spirit in form. So spiritual form cannot be perceived by a person who's still materially conditioned. Therefore, for instance, in the temples we have the form of the deity, Archavigraha, where Krishna makes himself visible to us. And even in Krishna's pastimes, when he performed his pastimes, people saw him in different ways. For example, when Krishna entered the wrestling arena in Mathura, people were seeing him in different ways. Some people saw him as an insignificant personality. The yogis saw him as the Paramatma, the elevated yogis. The Brajvasis saw him as their kinsman. He's the boy, a boy from our village that we love. So people were seeing according to their capacity to see. And this is very much a theme, not only in the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, which we're going to be exploring a little bit, but also in Prabhupada's writings and purports. So this is an important thing to try to understand, that we can only, what we think we're seeing also sometimes is not what's going on a deeper level. We sometimes think we're seeing something in its true form, but a transcendentalist, a very advanced transcendentalist will see it in a completely different way. So, seeing is not necessarily believing. Some people only believe what they can see, not realizing that there's different forms of seeing. So on that basis, I wanted to explore a little bit this, because there's no way I could go through 21 pages of Bhaktisiddhanta's purport. First of all, some of the arguments he gives are grammatical ones, which I can't even follow. Maybe a Sanskrit scholar could follow. But then again, many of the points he makes are relevant, and many of the points Prabhupada also covers in his purports. So this is a statement from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is from Prabhupada's writings, a purport to the 14th chapter, 8th verse of the Bhagavatam. So I'm just going to read and then discuss a little. All of the above statements by the Lord apply to different plenary portions of the Lord, namely his expansions such as Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Narayana. These are all he himself in different transcendental expansions, and still the Lord as Sri Krishna functions in a different sphere of transcendental exchange with different grades of devotees. So that, in other words, Krishna reveals himself according to the grade of the devotee. Grading mean the status or the capacity, again, the adhikar of those devotees. And yet, but back to Prabhupada's words, and yet, Lord Krishna, as he is, appears once every 24 hours of Brahma's time, or after a lapse of 8,640,000,000 solar years, in each and every universe. And all his transcendental pastimes are displayed in each and every universe in a routine spool, like a film unwinding. But in that routine spool, the functions of Lord Krishna, Lord Vasudeva, etc. are complex problems for the layman. Sometimes when devotees read these statements like complex problems for the layman, they think, oh yeah, that means the karmis. No, it means us also. I mean, the books were written for us and for others, of course, but they're also for us. There is no difference between the Lord's self and the Lord's transcendental body. The expansions execute different activities. When the Lord, however, appears in his person as Lord Sri Krishna, his other plenary portions also join in him by his inconceivable potency called Yogamaya. So when Krishna appears in this realm, in this world, all the other expansions appear with him. So he can really be whoever he likes at any given moment. Just like in Vrindavan, Krishna is sporting with his associates, and when it comes time to killing the demons, he appears as Vasudeva. So he can appear as whoever he likes in any moment, because everyone is there, all of his different expansions. So it says, and thus the Lord Krishna of Vrindavan is different from the Lord Krishna of Mathura or the Lord Krishna of Dwarka. The Virat Rupa of Lord Krishna is also different from him by his inconceivable potency. The Virat Rupa exhibited on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. So, therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. The Lord is Kaivalya, and for him there is no difference between matter and spirit because everything is created from him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body or accepting another body does not mean that he is like the ordinary living being. All such activities are simultaneously one and different by his inconceivable potency. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was lamenting the possibility of his disappearance, it was just in pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But factually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body, as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, and they are known as the mudhas. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhams, transcendental abodes, as he left his virat rupa in the material world. So, some people actually take it literally that when Lord Krishna, now you just imagine this, that they're imagining that Lord Krishna is shot in the foot. By the way, shot in the, I believe, the heel. And that was what caused his disappearance. So first of all, even an ordinary person generally doesn't die from being shot in the foot. But what really happens is that the Lord leaves a replica, you could say, formed of the illusory energy. And in his actual form, he departs for his abode. So, and he left all the other expansions that he appeared with in this world in their respective dhams, Dwarka, the eternal Dwarka, the eternal Mathura, the eternal Vrindavan. So these things are a little bit inconceivable or a bit difficult to understand. Now, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, just wanted to mention in regards to this difference between the body and soul of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, that there isn't one. There is never a difference. This is the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commenting. There is never a difference between the body and soul of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, but when we hear statements that Lord Vishnu accepted a body, it is like an actor taking on another hand to protect his body in a drama. Although Lord Vishnu, who is beyond material perception, appears and disappears, statements like, quote, his form of Krishna, or, quote, his form of Ram, are applicable to him alone because he possesses unadulterated spiritual opulences. In the Korma Purana, it is stated, although the Supreme is neither gigantic nor infinitesimal, he is completely gigantic and infinitesimal. Again, this is a problem for people brought up in Western culture. When you say something is not so and something is so at the same time, people go, "Well, which is it?" We can say that characterizes a great deal of Western thought, whereas Eastern thought says both. It's not neither nor or either or. It's both and. So everything is possible for Krishna. So here it says, although the Lord appears contradictory due to possessing spiritual opulences, it is improper to attribute any type of mundane faults on the Supreme Lord. Yet even though apparent contradictory qualities are seen through material perception, one will have to understand that they are inconceivably reconciled in him. So, this, now back to this theme that I mentioned at the beginning, we're discussing how, about qualification. So this particular verse comes from the fourth canto in the instructions of Prithu Maharaj. So it's a little lengthy, so I'm going to just read the verse and then a part of the purport. Prithu Maharaj advised his citizens, engaging your minds, your words, your bodies, and the results of your occupational duties, and being always open-minded, you should all render devotional service to the Lord. According to your abilities and the occupations in which you are situated, you should engage your service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full confidence and without reservation. Then you will surely be successful and achieving the final objective of your lives. So, part of this purport, it's stated, the question may be raised that since the Lord is supposed to be worshipped by great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and others, how can an ordinary human being on this planet serve him? This is clearly explained by Prithu Maharaj by the use of the word yathadikara, according to one's ability. If one sincerely executes his occupational duty, that will be sufficient. One does not need to become like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, Lord Chaitanya, or Ramanujacharya, whose capabilities are certainly far above ours. Even a Shudra, who is in the lowest stage of life according to the material qualities, can achieve the same success. Anyone can become successful in devotional service, provided he displays no duplicity. Now, this is an important statement. What does it mean when we say duplicity? Any of you? We say that someone is exhibiting duplicity.
Doing one thing, saying one thing, doing another.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Anybody else? Yes. Yeah, acting with an ulterior motive. Well, they say he has a hidden agenda. Sometimes people seem to have hidden agendas. They're behaving a certain way socially, but they have a certain motivation that's different. So here it says, anyone can become successful in devotional service, provided he displays no duplicity. It is explained here that one must be very frank and open-minded, amayina. That's a Sanskrit term for that. It says, the only qualification is that one must be open, frank, and free from reservations. If one engages himself seriously in devotional service, working with body, mind, intelligence, he is sure to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. The Lord's lotus feet are described here as Kama Dukangri Pankajam, because they have all power to fulfill the desires of everyone. A devotee is happy even in this life because although in material existence we have many needs, all his material needs are satisfied, and when he at last quits his body, he goes back home, back to Godhead without a doubt. So a nice instruction by King Prithu. So I'm sort of skipping around a bit. I'm sorry, but there's so much to cover, but time is limited, and I'm sure your patience with my rambling will also be limited. I want to get back to Lakshmi and her disappearance now, our so-called disappearance. There's a little description here in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Lord Chaitanya was preaching in East Bengal and making many people his disciples. He was a great scholar, and people were very impressed with him. But in the meantime, Lakshmi Devi was not too happy. It says here, I'll just read, Lakshmi was in great distress due to separation from the Lord. She did not reveal this to anyone. So this in itself is interesting. I think it's a mark of incredible character. Oftentimes, speaking personally, if I'm experiencing distress, I let everybody know. I have a tendency. But a person who's quite very elevated, they may be distressed or disturbed, but they keep it to themselves. Actually, this is quite an English trait. Stiff upper lip. Sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not so good. It can be both, it can be either. But in this case, she didn't reveal her feelings. She was serving Mother Sachi with great sincerity. And it said she accepted some rice only in name, for she was deeply distressed in separation from the Lord. She passed the nights alone, crying incessantly. Her heart found no relief for even a moment. Finally, Lakshmi could no longer tolerate separation from the Lord, and she desired to go join him. Text 104, Lakshmi left a replica body on the bank of the Ganges in this world and went invisibly to the side of the Lord. So she couldn't be with him in the material sense, because the Lord was in East Bengal. She was at home with Mother Sachi. So she deserted she left, and he calls it a replica. So this also, in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Brahmana, who was endlessly lamenting about how Ravana had touched the body of Sita and kidnapped her, and how terrible it was, and he couldn't eat practically or sleep. He was so disturbed, and Lord Chaitanya told him not to worry, and then later found this Karma Purana, in which it's explained about the Maya Sita, and how when Ravana came to kidnap Sita, the spiritual Sita disappeared, and she left the replica, which was kidnapped. It's called the Maya Sita sometimes. So, like that, Lakshmi, in fact, there are some people that actually believe that Lakshmi Devi was actually literally bitten by a snake, and that's what caused her to pass away. But Lakshmi Devi is an eternal associate of the Lord in the spiritual form. So what is the question of her disappearing due to a snake bite? So these pastimes, in one sense, they're described by the acharyas as illusory. Illusory in the sense that if you think that this replica is actual, is the actual form of the Lord or of his associates, then you can be bewildered into thinking they died like ordinary people. But the Acharyas assure us that this is not the case. So now I'm going to read a few statements and try to comment on them by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his commentary on this particular pastime of Lakshmi Devi's disappearance. He writes, "The replica body and disappearance of Lakshmi Devi are explained as follows. Sri Lakshmi Priya Devi is the internal spiritual potency of Gaur Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahalakshmi is described in the Gaura Gonadesh Deepika as follows." You know, this is the book by who? Gaura Gonadesh Deepika? Huh? No? People don't know this? Yeah, because I'm not remembering it either right now. But Gaura Gonadesh Deepika he was called Puri when he was a child, but I'm trying to remember. Sorry, it's not coming to me. Anyway, huh? Yes, Kavi Karnapur. So, this is what he writes. "She who previously appeared as Sri Janaki, Rukmini, and Lakshmi has now appeared as Lakshmi in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the Sanskrit book Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahakavya, it is stated this Lakshmi of Navadvip is the incarnation of that Lakshmi of Vaikuntha. And, quote, Lakshmi has personally incarnated in this world. While describing Mahalakshmi, Krishna's queens, and the gopis of Braja, Sri Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has stated in his Sri Krishna Sandarbha, quote, in the second Bhagavat Sandarbha, it has been established that the Lord is the Supreme Absolute Truth and that he has two energies." So we sometimes describe these energies as internal and external. So it says, "Of the two, the first is related to the Lord as his internal potency and as his worshipable to the Vaishnavas as the Lord himself." So anything manifested by the internal potency is non-different than the Lord and is considered worshipable. So it says the Supreme Lord's supreme position is due to this Swarup Shakti. The second energy, Maya, is fit, like the material world, to be neglected by the Vaishnavas. So it's tricky because we have to neglect the influence of Maya, but at the same time be respectful. You know, we can't take a disrespectful, even though we're neglecting Maya's influence, understanding that it's a test of our sincerity, but at the same time, we should be respectful because she has such power. We can be overcome. So here it says, he's in his writing, he says, this is, he's quoting from Jiva Goswami's writings. Bhaktisiddhanta is quoting. And he says, "She is the transformation of the Lord's energy. The manifestation of the world is due to this Bahirangamaya Shakti, or the illusory external energy. Of these two potencies, the word Lakshmi is used to indicate the former, the Swarup Shakti, just as the word Bhagavat is used to indicate the person who possesses these two energies. This is also clearly shown in the Bhagavat Sandarbha." So, Lakshmi is a completely divine personality. So if she apparently leaves a body when she has this disappearance pastime, this is like the analogy that's given again and again by the Acharyas. It's like the behavior of a magician when he apparently makes someone disappear or causes some disastrous thing to happen, but it turns out not to be true. In other words, it's like a magician's trick to fool those who deserve to be fooled. How do we deserve to be fooled, do you think? Any opinions? How does one become deserved to be fooled? Yes. Yeah, that's okay. But why? How do we deserve to be fooled? We could choose to remain ignorant. Any other? Well, certainly if we listen to a fool, we deserve to be fooled. Yes, that's a good point. Anything else? Come on, Vishwambar, I know that you have insight. We deserve to be fooled if we... I think that last statement was very good, that if we listen to a fool. So if you listen to someone who has no authority to speak on such topics, or if you listen to your mind and senses, just like... So what is that statement about? If you have yourself as a guru, then you have a... What is it? You have a... How does that go? Do you know? If you're your own guru, then you've made a bad choice, basically. So the point is, we have to listen to the authoritative sources if we want to understand things. Here it says, the purport is that since the Swarup Shakti and the Shaktiman, so that means energy and the energetic are inseparable or non-different, or they are constitutionally non-different because their only distinction is their constitutional relationship as Vishaya and Ashraya. So Ashraya, the shelter, Vishaya, that which takes shelter. The enjoyer and the enjoyed. Therefore, even though one is Atmarama, so this is Lakshmi is actually speaking in this way to Krishna at one point. Because this is our relationship, the enjoyer and the enjoyed, therefore your attachment to me is proper. Someone might argue that it's not proper, but it's completely proper. So these are all statements that Bhaktisiddhanta references in his writings. Here is one from Vishnu Purana, in which he says, O best of the Brahmanas, Lord Vishnu's Swarup Shakti is the eternal mother of the universe. She is never separated from Vishnu. Just as Lord Vishnu is present everywhere, his Swarup Shakti, Mahalakshmi, is also present everywhere. So just as he is all-pervading, she is all-pervading. And in the commentary on Brahma Sutra, Madhvacharya quotes this verse. There is no actual difference between the energy and the energetic. But sometimes, out of his own sweet will, they appear different. The Vishnu Sanghita says, there is certainly no difference between the energy and the energetic. From such scriptural statements, we can understand that the energetic Vishnu and his related Swarup Shakti are non-different. So, in that sense, there's no difference between Lakshmi and Krishna. They are eternally together, they are eternally in union, and they are of the same substance. This is from the Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha, and he's quoting from Madhvacharya's writings. He writes, the scriptural statements that the Supreme Lord has accepted and given up bodies in his incarnation, such as Krishna and Ram, are mentioned simply to satisfy the mentality of foolish people. And again, back to that, we remember it said they were called mudhas earlier. So for the mudhas, it appears, this is what appears to happen, that Krishna is accepting and giving up bodies in his incarnation, such as Krishna and Ram. Then in the Varaha Purana it stated, the Supreme Lord and his Swarup Shakti do not possess material forms made of flesh, bones, and marrow. His transcendental form, however, is not the result of mystic perfections, for since he is directly the personality of Godhead, his form is eternal, infallible, and supreme. In the Mahavaraha Purana, it is stated, everything related to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, beginning with his body, is everlasting and eternal, devoid of both material purity and impurity, and never born of matter. In other words, they are not material. They are objects of fully uninterrupted bliss and completely spiritual. They are full of transcendental qualities and non-different from one another. Due to possessing all qualities, they are fully devoid of superiority and inferiority in relationship with each other. There is never a difference between the body and soul of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. But when we hear statements that Lord Vishnu accepted a body, it is like an actor taking on, I read this previously, taking on another hand to protect his body in a drama. Although Lord Vishnu, who is beyond material perception, appears and disappears, statements like, quote, his form of Krishna or his form of Ram are applicable to him alone because he possesses unlimited spiritual opulences. Here's another. Again, this statement is again coming from commentaries of Madhvacharya, I believe. Here it says, the doubt raised by foolish materialists who are bewildered by Maya that Mahalakshmi, Sri Lakshmi Devi, who is the Swarup Shakti of Gaur Narayan, left her body due to being bitten by a snake, like a conditioned soul, is properly cleared by Srimad Bhagavatam, the crest jewel of scriptures. And the Acharyas who follow Srimad Bhagavatam in their descriptions of Krishna's disappearance. So, in other words, the same doubts that people have about Krishna disappearing from this world, they also tend to apply to Krishna's associates. But they're equally wrong in their understanding. This is from the Madhvacharya's commentary called Bhagavat Tatparya. It says, when the scriptures use words like give up in connection with the disappearance of the Lord, it refers to the earth because Lord Vishnu never gives up his own limbs. Then he writes, the word akrida refers to the place of pastimes, or in other words, this material world. The word anga means his own land because the earth is his body. And other scriptural statements are evidence of this fact. This is from the writings of one of Madhvacharya's disciples, Sri Vijayadvaja. Then Sridhar Swami writes, when will the Supreme Lord desire to give up his own pastimes, or in other words, give up the anga that assists in his pastimes, or in other words, give up the drama of a human, imitating the activities of a human being in the material world? So this is Krishna's Leela, that he imitates the activities of a human, and he even imitates this business of appearing and disappearing. Sutta Goswami explains that just like a magician, and this is from the first canto, just like a magician, he relinquishes one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation and others. When the personality of Godhead Lord Krishna left this earthly planet in his self-same form. How the Lord accepts and gives up forms such as Matsya is being described with the following example. Just as an actor, while remaining in his original form, accepts and gives up another form, similarly the Lord, Supreme Lord also gave up that form visible to mundane eyes. So what form does Krishna give up when he leaves? A mundane form, or you could say a material form, which is in relation to this earth, an earthly form. That's not his original form. That's a replica, in which we can later recite. You know, there was also a similar incident with Brahma, which we'll read later, when he actually thought he was kidnapping the cowherd boys. He wasn't kidnapping. He was kidnapping, it's explained, some other boys. And Krishna manifested himself as those as the original cowherd boys. So here it says that it's like an actor. Just like an actor. Or in other places, just like a magician performing a magic act. Oh, you remember when Vasudeva was kidnapped by Shalva, and a false Vasudeva was killed, and done in such a impeccable magician-like way that Krishna, under the influence of Yoga Maya, became bewildered. Oh, Vasudeva has been killed, and then realized, oh no, this is an illusion. He figured out it was an illusion. So whenever we hear that Krishna or Krishna's associates are disappearing from this world, what's disappearing is not, they're not dying, so to speak, but rather an illusory form is being left to bewilder those who want to see Krishna as an ordinary person or to see his associates as ordinary persons. So here in Padma Purana, it says, this has all been assembled by Bhakti. Just to try to appreciate this scholarship of Bhaktisiddhanta, it's like some of it, you know, Prabhupada said about him, he said that I would listen. Sometimes I would understand. Sometimes I would not understand. But I would go on hearing. And it's sort of like that reading I read all 21 pages. And some of it I understood and some of it I didn't understand. So I'm trying to just quote the bits that I understood a little bit. So this is from Padma Purana. It says, the yogis see Lord Janardhan on the strength of their devotional service. So in other words, the yogis, when Krishna entered the wrestling arena, as we were talking about earlier, the yogis saw the Paramatma. Other people saw an insignificant personality, so many people saw him in so many different ways, according to their capacity, according to their ability, according to their qualification. They saw Krishna differently. So here it says, the yogis see Lord Janardhan on the strength of their devotional service. He never appears before those on the non-devotional path. No one who is angry or envious can see him. Now it's going to explain, well, how is it then when Krishna was on the earth, everybody saw him? They saw what they had qualification to see. They may have seen the illusory form, they may have seen the original form, depending on their qualification. So here it says, he never appears, meaning in his original form, he never appears to those on the non-devotional path. No one who is angry or envious can see him. And Srimad Bhagavatam states, to the wrestlers, Krishna appeared as a thunderbolt. These conclusive statements confirm that the form manifested by the Supreme Lord before the demons is not his original form. So when a demon comes before Krishna, whether it's Kamsa, whether it's the wrestlers, whether it's some of the other demons that attack Krishna, they're not seeing the original form of Krishna. It says here, is not his original form, but an illusory form. This is according to Padma Purana. If one sees the original form of the Lord, his envious nature is destroyed. Therefore, in order to diminish the burden of the earth, the Supreme Lord gave up only that form by which he annihilated the demons. He did not appear again in that form. The form of the Lord that is seen through the medium of devotion is nitya-siddha, eternally perfect. That is why the word aja is used. Therefore, as an actor or magician dressed as a fish to kill a crane that eats fish takes the form of a fish in order to create an impression in the minds, he's talking about matsya here, takes the form of a fish in order to create an impression in the minds of people that he is a fish, and as soon as the crane is killed, he immediately gives up the temporary form of fish. Similarly, although Lord Krishna Chandra is aja, devoid of birth like ordinary living entities, he killed the demons to diminish the burden of the earth with his illusory form manifested before the mundane vision of the materialists. After killing these demons, he, the unborn Lord, also gave up his mundane illusory form. But the previously mentioned statement of Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Maya Samavrita, actually means his body is covered. Now, this is kind of an important statement because this is the way this is explained by the Padma Purana. It says, what this Yoga Maya Samavrita actually means, his body is covered by a reflection of the illusory energy, just as a snake is covered by its skin. That's sort of an interesting analogy. They're describing the temporary material form of the Lord as a snake skin. The Acharyas actually really explain things very creatively. But in a way, they're trying to relate to our own experience in this world. We see snakes, and we know that some snakes shed their skins. So just like that, Lord Krishna sheds these illusory forms. But the eternal form remains the same. But because he's the supreme magician, it looks real. It looks completely authentic. And so those who don't want to see him as an ordinary person or as maybe a powerful, but still just like any other human, then they're fooled by the illusory energy in that way. But those who have a deeper understanding. So, so he quotes all kinds of things. He quotes the Bhagavad Sandarbha, the Krama Sandarbha, Jiva, which are the writings, of course, of Jiva Goswami. Here, this is another interesting analysis. He says, how Lord Krishna, like a magician, created some conception by making a show of giving up his fake body is described in this verse. The purport is that the Supreme Lord accepts, manifests a form, and gives up, unmanifests that form. In other words, he simply makes a show of giving up his body. But after accepting a form, he does not give it up. From this, it should be understood that when the Lord gives up, unmanifests his form, the same form remains present in the transcendental realm. If one asks, how can this be understood? Good question. The answer is stated herein. Just as a magician creates an impression for people that he has given up his own body, either by cutting it to pieces, burning it, or falling unconscious, though he actually remains in his body and does not die, similarly the Supreme Lord accepts bodies like Matsya and also gives them up. In other words, he accepts them and simply makes a show of giving them up. So the giving up, that's a show. But the actual transcendental form is eternal. Therefore, just as a musician possessing his own body is a reality, his giving up that body is illusory. Similarly, that the Lord accepts bodies like Matsya is actually true, and that he gives up such bodies is actually illusory. This is the purport. Just as the Lord gives up his other incidental bodies like Matsya, he simply gave up the mundane form by which he diminished the burden of the earth. Therefore, since the entire incident of Lord Krishna's giving up forms is illusory and false, being the Supreme Brahman in the form of a human being, he simply imitates giving up bodies like ordinary human beings. Yet actually, he does not do so. For since his form is transcendental, beyond the material elements, there is no possibility of his body being destroyed. As stated in the Mahabharata, the five gross material elements are not present in the body of Krishna, the Supersoul. The Brihad Vishnu Purana also says, according to the injunctions of the Vedas and Smritis, one who considers that Krishna's body is made of material elements should be rejected. If one sees such a person, he should take bath with his clothes on. Which, when Lord Chaitanya Nityananda went to visit this mendicant, you remember? I don't know if you remember this pastime, and the person actually began to offer them things like meat and liquor. They ran to the Ganges and jumped in with all their clothes on because they were so horrified that this so-called brahmana was behaving in this way, just for their own purification, to set an example. And here it says, if someone thinks that Krishna's body made of material elements, they should take bath with their clothes on, which means you don't hesitate, you just immediately go and jump in the river. Or I guess, I don't know exactly, I guess if you didn't have a river, what would you do? You could chant that mantra that they teach you in deity worship, but where you call the sacred rivers, you know, fill up a bathtub and jump into that, I guess. If you want to follow this injunction, that is. Or you just chant Hare Krishna. Here's another one. This is Madhvacharya again. The word akriti means the earth, because according to the dictionaries, the words sharira, akriti, deha, ku, prithi, and mahi all have similar meanings. The Skanda Purana says that the phrase Lord Hari gave up his body means he left the earth. Since he is the personification of eternal bliss, there cannot be any other meaning. Although the Supreme Lord Vishnu is the personification of knowledge, like an actor, he exhibits a dead form or dead body resembling himself in order to bewilder the materialists. So that's the explanation for why does he do it? It's for those who are envious, those who are materialistic, those who don't want to accept him as the Supreme Lord. So to give them an out, so to speak, just like sometimes you make a proposal to somebody and then you say, but if you don't want to do it, you know, you can go through this door or you can take this option. So he leaves that as an option. You can accept me or reject me. This is even in Bhagavad Gita at the end, this is the proposal he makes to Arjuna. Now you've heard whatever I have to say. I'm paraphrasing. Well, you've heard whatever I have to say. Now you can do whatever you like. So it's the same with Krishna's Leela. The Acharyas have explained why he behaves this way and what is actually taking place. So then we have the choice. We can take it or leave it. But Bhaktisiddhanta wants us to take it. Therefore, he's written this 21-page purport. Just a few more, almost at the end, but just a few more that are really especially nice. Let's see. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto. Krishna is speaking to his chariot driver, Daruka. And he wanted to give Daruka some comfort or to make sure he didn't misunderstand anything. So he states, understand these pastimes to be a display of my illusory potency and you should remain peaceful. And it's explained in the writings of Jiva Goswami in the Krama Sandarbha. He writes, in order to solace Daruka, the Lord explains in this verse that his pastimes of giving up his body is like a magic act created by the power of his illusory energy. Know that my recent activities, like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty and the giving up of my body, which were manifest before the eyes of ordinary people, are like a magic show created by my illusory energy. Thus, you should remain indifferent. The word "to" in the first half of the above verse means let ordinary people who are averse to me be bewildered. So, ordinary people who are averse. What does that mean, averse? Yes, against. Who are not favorable. Who want to reject me. So he says, let ordinary people who are averse to me be bewildered. But it is not reasonable for you to be bewildered. So he's speaking to Daruka, who's totally devoted to him. Don't be confused. This is just a show. Then referencing the this statement about illusory citta. When he was petitioned by Mother Sita, the fire god Agni brought forth an illusory form of Sita, and Ravana, who had 10 heads, kidnapped the false Sita. The original Sita then went to the abode of the fire god. When Lord Ramachandra tested the body of Sita, it was the false illusory Sita that entered the fire. At that time, the fire god brought the original Sita from his abode and delivered her to Lord Ramachandra. According to this statement from the Brihad Agni Purana, materialists have misinterpreted the example of the illusory or false pastimes of Ravana kidnapping Sita, the transcendental goddess of fortune, and the foolish person's misconceptions about personalities like Sri Shankarshan. What to speak of the Yadavas who possess transcendental spiritual bodies? Various other persons who are maintained by Krishna are also not subjected to death. Was Krishna unable to protect his own associates, the Yadavas? Therefore, the yacht of his activities, such as giving up their bodies, are not real pastimes. Rather, it is most reasonable to accept that they returned to the spiritual world in their same bodies. One more, and then I'll try to wrap it up a little bit. From the same commentary on Mahabharata, it is stated, although the Supreme Lord and Master of all living entities, Achyuta, is Sachidananda Vigraha, in his disappearance pastimes of incarnations in which he does not exhibit illusion or maya during his appearance, he imitates an ordinary living entity giving up his body in order to bewilder the demons and send them to the darkest regions of hell. Sorry. Sounds kind of heavy, doesn't it? He imitates an ordinary living entity giving up his body in order to bewilder the demons and send them to the darkest regions of hell by creating a material body that resembles a rejected dead body. It just says resembles one. It doesn't say it is one. It says it resembles one. Just like sometimes people see something they think is real, and it's not. And some people talk to statues because they don't know that they're just a statue. But anyway, the point is, it resembles a rejected dead body. And after leaving it lying on the ground, he personally goes to Vaikuntha. So these forms, so-called forms, are illusions created by the external energy. Just a couple more references. You know, when Brahma... This is the one I wanted to mention there. Well, there's two things. But anyway, I have a couple more minutes. Brahma wanted to take away Krishna's associates. You know, this is from that pastime with Brahma kidnapping the... It says, but instead he took away some other boys and calves. Ravana wanted to take away Sita, but that was impossible. And instead he took away Amaya Sita. Similarly, Brahma took away Mayarbhakaha, boys manifested by Krishna's Maya. Brahma could show some extraordinary opulence to the Mayarbhaka, but he could not show any extraordinary potency to Krishna's associates. So in other words, Krishna's associates are on a completely transcendental platform. There's no way he could kidnap them. He didn't have that power. But Krishna wanted to fulfill his desire to teach him a lesson, and he allowed this so-called kidnapping to take place. So it says, anyone materially born is subject to bewilderment. This pastime is therefore called Brahma Vimohana Lila, the pastime of bewildering Brahma. Materially born persons cannot fully understand Krishna. Even demigods cannot understand him. Huyanti atsuryaha. So everyone from Brahma down to the small insect must take lessons from Krishna. So, in essence, I think it must be clear by now that the so-called disappearance pastimes of Krishna and his associates, eternal associates, is like a magic show meant to bewilder people who are envious or demonic in their perception. So, we want, the whole point of practicing Krishna consciousness is to deepen our perception ultimate reality. Presently, just like Krishna is so merciful that he appears to us in a form we can actually perceive. But an advanced transcendentalist sees the original form and we see something else. But still, Krishna is very kind and he appears to us in a way that we can actually appreciate and serve. To render service, especially. So that's our good fortune. So if there are any questions on this topic, this will be the time.